Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while walking. I suppose getting used to me having a bit of a side discussion about what I'm doing in terms of rehab, blood tests and that type of stuff. Then a general area description of what I'm doing, and then getting into the meat of it, sort of walking along, just talking about it fairly, very much randomly. I'll follow that. This time I want to sort of develop an idea for a video podcast, a vlog as they call it, for quantum physicist in the Australian bush. That's where I try and talk about quantum physics. So that's what I want to do. Now, at the moment, I'm walking back from Black Cylinder down into the village of Glenbrook along this long long path. It'll take me a little while, about 20 minutes to do it. It's just raining lightning, and I've come from a blood test, and I've finally, think I may have cracked, I won't celebrate quite yet, and that's having a litre of water to drink as you walk along, and then just putting that litre, and that was sort of the fastest, smoothest blood test I've had in a fair while, and generally it should be pretty. Yeah, wouldn't be ideal if it was every 3 months, but yeah, I'd have to be stable for a month, for a year, then we'd go 3 months. But at the moment, it's every week. I had gone up to every fortnight, and it's just lightly raining now. I've got my head on, and there's yet another barbecue. For some reason, people throw out their barbecue, and in this case, suitcases, and I'm crossing the road, so hopefully, I don't know how many people with heart valves are taking warfarin, and warfarin's sort of like, it's like the major shelf they've got in there, and they've got a fair amount of warfarin, so there's a fair amount of warfarin in the community, so it's one of these great success stories I'm on warfarin, but you know, see how it goes. It's probably a statement about society. I'm on warfarin for this particular thing, but I think there's more account of people that are on warfarin are diet related, to blood related type of stuff. So blood. You know. So I'm quite hopeful of that, and the general sort of. As I said before, process, experiment, sort of seeing this, that one process lead on to another process, lead on to various things, and I'm in the process of producing podcasts, so many podcasts a day, but also the process of feeding them into video podcasts and how that goes, just looking at process improvement. So they're not, it's not the event that I'm looking at. And I think the last podcast I gave was on sort of side issues of the Christ Church massacre, but sort of reflecting back in terms of realizing that you're on a different process, open-ended bias. Yeah, like if you're running processes, biases are your enemy. If you're running events, you've got to read a bias and use a bias. But but I think it's a major way through. So on this one, I'm going to look at stepping back a little bit from quantum mechanics, because I just read this book about in the description of quantum mechanics, and it's absolutely awful. Like it says that if you're not giddy by quantum mechanics, you haven't even really understood it, which is a bizarre type of ho-ho-ho, no one understands, oh, stuff. And this is part of the story of trying to actually no one is saying, you might not understand it, but what you believe at the moment is completely whack. No one has said that. Everyone is saying it's giddy, but they haven't said the second part of the talk here, is that what you believe in terms of the speck electron and the tiny proton and all that type of stuff, and then being just miniature basketball, miniature this, and I haven't really upgraded your analogy network to go in. And just on that, I was trying to explain what upgrading your analogy network is. That say, if I say an electron is a ping pong ball, is an analogy of it, except the electron's much smaller and exists in the air. And people think, okay, well, I can, once they click onto the analogy, they get the whole raft of things and then reapply it, because this is what we're trained to do. We're trained to pick up one apple or one fruit as a chimp in a tree. Tastes good. By analogy, I can do all of this. And so it's generally, we're trained at a particular level of analogy. Whereas, what happens is as you shrink, the analogy is correct in terms of it's got mass, but it doesn't have any of the other properties. So when you go down, the only thing that is correct relationship with that analogy of this and that is not the colour, not the fact that it does have mass, and it only has the property of mass, or it has the property of charge, but there's no components in it of charge. It's got the component of magnetic field, but there is no currents generate a magnetic field. So I could generate, I could say it's like this coil of wire, but there is no coil of wire there. So the analogy is like this, but it's this transition downwards that we've got here. So there's sort of like this double shock to people. One is what I believe is whack, and secondly, that their fundamental analogy engine needs an upgrade in order to do quantum physics. And I suppose that the other thing is to demystify, in that a quantum physicist is not a shaman, someone who is incontent. They're not any spectacular. They're just someone who is not, you know, has basically, I suppose there's one positive thing they have understood or accepted differential equations, and just checking in some questions here, differential equations and algebraic numbers. They've accepted that. They haven't necessarily understood that. They've accepted that's the way to go. Then I think they have this, the second thing is that they have made an acknowledgement that the world, that the current way of describing things is whack, is inadequate, and then after that, what is it? Knowledge of this, I was trying to think, Jesus, my thought, I think there's a third element to understanding that it's the understanding of the maths, this acknowledgement that the maths could be the right way to go. Then it's the understanding that what we're teaching is whack. There's a third thing for to be a quantum physicist, but it's not necessarily, if you are someone who's not a quantum physicist, I think you can describe someone who's not a quantum physicist, and that is someone who, trying to work out. Oh yeah, so that's amazing. It's a highway up there. Okay. So there's someone who's not a quantum physicist is someone, if someone, is not interested in differential equations, algebraic numbers, they're probably not a quantum physicist. If someone who says, I believe in quantum physics, but I also believe in this whack belief, they're probably not quantum physicists. There's that third thing I had in my head that sort of disappeared. I really hate to say it, but so it's trying to actually demystify in terms of the very much idea is that others will tolerate them, but they're excluded from society. They're much revered, sort of like they're like the intellectual albinos, in terms of they look different. We're going to treat them differently, and we might feed them, but we definitely wouldn't let a quantum physicist stand for the parliament, represent us, or make any decisions, because they're just not. They're exclusive. So I just want to think there's that other third aspect of it. So the very first one is your ability, the fundamental ability to take quantum physics and move forward with it. It's sort of like the ability to walk with it. And the second one is an ability to use it as your framework. Work of reference. There is a third area. I just wish I could. If I talk about it, I can't remember it really. It's gone from the top of my head. Now, I think we have a story here. I think people think in terms of stories, and I don't know whether quantum physicists do think in terms of stories. I have to think about it. But I think communication is in terms of stories, and. People in general have got this whack belief in atoms, a completely bizarre belief that they're empty space and they're little dot electrons travelling in the orbits, everyone sees them, and they're in that situation and therefore they can't move forward. And I want you to take you back in time to not too far back to the Inca civilization. I'm going to mix some of the stories from the Inca civilizations with the Mexicans, the Aztecs. They're separate. Mexico is above the equator in the northern hemisphere. Incas in the southern hemisphere. But some of the fundamental processes are the same. So Inca refers to the Grand Inca. It's sort of like the king feudalism. It's the king civilization. And I'm going to say so a few things. What they believed is they made perfectly common sense belief. They saw the sun appear over there, then go over the horizon. It's there. It's gone over there. Where did it go? Oh, it's back up there. So the thought was that it either swam around, it didn't go underneath, because if I want to get somewhere, I don't tunnel underneath the ground, I go around the mountain range. So if I want to outflank someone, I will walk around the back of the town. So they believe that in terms of scenery, it went around the back of it. And we would respect it. And a lot of the solar feasts are based on this belief of the sun being animated and doing this fantastic thing. It is a sort of a big moving thing. What happens? Majority of things, the large as much as on it's whatever it is, the trees grow a little bit. The big thing which happens is the sun moves. And the most logical explanation is that it moves like me walking from one crest, disappearing over the other crest, and then the next day I walk again. This is sort of multiple suns. It's the same one, obviously. And so it does that. Now, we're going to stop at the minute before we see how this belief system is built into a culture such that you cannot separate it from the culture. So you have cultural fusion of an idea. And now, the Incas had a socialist system, no money and no writing. They had strings which they tied things up, and knots and colours and various ways of writing knots, and they'd been doing it. And with no writing, they had to get communication, so I had people run along the roads with good memories and strings, and they would be able to get messages up and down the empire, and then they would run a taxation system, but with no ownership or wealth. It's totally socialist, focused on the head Inca, the Grand Inca. No, it's not a Grand Inca, it was just the Inca. So you got it there, and essentially, I'm going to keep this as a powder dry about how they raise the children, but at a certain point, you'd be married, be your duty to be married as select. You'd have your wife, you'd have to have children as required, and then at a certain point, you'd retire, I think at a fairly old age, and then you'd be looked after. The rest of the time you had to work, and sometimes I think you could be punished by being sent off to the chocolate plantations on the other side of the Andes, and I mean, this is the way the system worked, and everything was focused on meeting the needs of the Inca going forward. So high school's out, I've got a lot of high school students walking inside, so there's this aspect. I won't get on to religious celebrations of the sun, but I will get on to the idea of education. Now, for education, whatever the reason was, within the structure, they believe that maternal contact with the child for the first 2 years was bad. You wouldn't be able to have a properly formed Inca, properly formed. Okay, we would think the opposite. Unless you dug a pit and you stuck your kid in the pit to live the first 2 years of life with no human contact. And that was the Inca early childhood education. That was 2 years, where's the kids? Have you put the kids in the pit? Think, oh, out of the pit. And of course, out of the pit, you'd have this blank slate, which would be ideal for training. Now, I would contest that our science education, this is a bit confrontational to say this, but our science education is basically an Inca pit. You put the kid in a pit, and we only feed them fats. We don't get them to do any mental work or challenge or anything. Okay, I've put that out there. But I want to say your education system, the white belief system. Now, if we can move up to the, I think it was the Incas, but most definitely the Aztecs, they had heart sacrifices and these you know, real colourful things. And their view was that part of the sun is actually in people's hearts, and it gives them white vitality, sort of really good sort of viewpoint. Therefore, we have to cut them open and get a beating heart and hold it up and throw the body down to the waiting people who would allegedly eat them. We don't quite know if this is true. And this created a society. So I would say the analogy of this is educating people for degrees, you know, a system in that. What happens is you have priests, systems, the political taxation system starts to operate on this. It's sort of things basically the function of society, that if you have someone trained in science and they don't get it, that you can string them into other areas to actually push them along. Now, this process works really well, but then it began to get a little corrupted. So definitely back in the Aztecs, which is Northern, they had the Speaking Rock. That is a set of rocks which would speak and give some information to dictate how you could make a decision, and only the high priests could hear it. Now, this was completely crazy world led to when Cortez was coming, the rocks would start saying things which would protect the priests and destabilize the stuff. And so these people who are taught in this way are susceptible to be spoken to by rocks, which are interpreted by these interpreters, which I would say would be a news poll, something like that, with the spin merchants going forward. And the entire system built up such you could not, the whack idea was woven into the fabric of society. And you can imagine the fearsome logic which you would encounter if you began to challenge this as from Inca time and say, look, here's this mole, here's the marble, here that's the sun, this is the earth. Well, the earth is so small you can't see it, this thing, but it's actually there spinning around. You would say, they would say, look, very good, but congratulations, you've moved up the list and you are now ready to have your heart pulled out. So in terms of, they can hear it, but they have these other subtle ways of moving, shifting the rocks or the system such that the system guides itself back on. Now, one of the points is of system analysis is it's a set of interacting parts which is self-sustaining. So one of the aspects of a system, God, I'm going to have to try and walk past this guy who's having a piece of time fly fishing coming up. So I'm going to chat to him. Hi, is there any fly fish in the lagoon or it's somewhere else? Are there any fly fish in the lagoon?
Oh,
alright.
Yeah.
So you get greater things. It's a pretty big tragedy, the amount of carp and other.
Yeah. Yeah, I went down the Cox's River. It's full of them.
Cox's?
Yeah, I went down.
That's up the Lett River and over the mountains.
No, okay. I went down through Megalong Valley.
Oh, yeah.
And went down there. So that means the dam's full of them for a gamble and all that. But I would have seen in about probably a kilometre stretch of water that I walked, I would have seen at least 100.
This carp.
Yeah, I caught one of them. Yeah.
And they're any good to eat or what? Complete.
No, I don't eat fish.
Oh, right. No. You just catch it, do you?
Yeah.
And do they carp go for the fly at all?
Yeah, I got it on a nymph about that big, little olive nymph. A lot of people fly fish for them. People go for everything with it, yeah.
It's pretty...
Yeah, spend more time practicing.
What?
Fishing. You spend more time practicing. You're casting.
Oh, for fly fishing, that's what you're doing at the moment, are you?
Yeah. I'm going to New Zealand for 2 weeks in a couple of...
And hopefully there's not carp. That would be disappointing.
No, that's trout I'm going for there.
All right.
But, you know, you can go for anything. You can always go for brim, flathead.
It's something which... Amazing.
Yeah, you just
And so there is a skill obviously. I mean, I'm not saying that rude. Yeah. It's just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of, I used to do, a lot of lure fishing, and it was like with bait casts and stuff, and it's like another step, you sort of want a bit more, so, you sort of go up to it.
And the entire thing is that you see a rip in the water and you start moving about the place, or in terms of can you sense the fish there? And do...
Well, I I go, like what I'm doing in New Zealand on sight fishing, like I'm looking for them, and then once I see them, then I'll try to catch them. So I'm not just fishing blind, I'm sort of, it's like you go and you're hunting something, but at the end of it, instead of being able to just pull the trigger and getting it, you've got to try and catch it, and then you still got to try and get it into a net. Like if you get it eaten fly, you've got to still get it into a net, and then we let it go.
Oh, right, that's excellent. I do.
Like the hooks I use don't have barbs on them, so they just like a point, and the fish will, you just let the fish go.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, some people eat them, but...
I'll get out of your head, but I do remember in Canada years ago going with these native people, and they knew where the fish was, and everyone would ritually catch the same fish over and over again.
Oh, yeah, some of them, I've caught the same fish twice in a day before. Like, I've walked up the stream, and then I've walked back down, and I've caught the same fish coming back. Yeah, because they've got different markings of things. Yeah, but it's sort of, like, if you catch them, it's like a bonus. It's everything else, you know, it's sort of being out there, got scenery, stuff like that. But there's so many variables, that... you know, you sort of, you spend a lot of time, you know, tying different flies, trying to work out what's going to work.
See, that's lovely. Yeah. Because everyone
become, guys that get into this become real conservationists. You start to realise that all the greenies and all that carry on, they're not telling you the truth. You know? Like you go down, like you look at the Nepean River now, it's had it. It's nowhere near as good as it was 10 years ago.
Because of...
It never gets flooded anymore. The places I used to fish, now, it's just a mass of...
weed.
Yeah, and silt, and mud, garbage and stuff, like where it used to get flushed out. And it will never get flushed again because as the dam wall goes up. Like, I've been here all my life, and I've fished there all my life, and... you see what happens?
Yeah,
but I go down the Snowies a lot too. And one thing I noticed down there is that because you don't have all this building around you, like this is all instant runoff now. There, it's not. So you'll get rain and those creeks will be flowing better.
For a lot much longer time.
Yeah, where here, you go down, say, when I was a kid, I used to go down Glenbrook Creek and 2 weeks after you had heavy rain, it'd still be flowing a lot better than it normally would. Now, it's...
What is it now? Because I think it was at Ray Williams' estate. There's dog poo in it. There's only one estate. And it's, I don't know if you know, behind Blackstone High School. No, Ray. But, they can't stop it. You think that might be something of urban design, do you think?
Eventually. Well, it is. I mean, and it's like all this global warming and things like that. Like, 25 years ago, I was riding around then, you know, because I was into motorbikes, you know, I've always have been, but I was riding along the Northern Road and it was freezing cold, and then, like I wore an open face helmet, you get to Penrith and you feel the temperature go up about 2 degrees. Because of all the buildings and stuff. It's like Glenmore Park and all that, it gets, like all that, you get the sun hitting all this, and then when it gets night, it's still radiating heat. So you've got like a big heater around you. So the temperature's not actually cooling to what it used to be before you had it all built. So there's a lot more that comes into it than what they're actually just saying. But they don't want to muck around with things that are going to affect the economy.
I'll have to get back home because I'll get in trouble. But the one thing I'm taking away is that if someone has a problem and they're coming into it and they're tweaking it, then they see a lot more things. This is like the fly fishing. Whereas the greenies have the solution already in their head and they're fitting what they see to it.
They're fitting to suit their own agenda, really. Like, they're not really observing the whole lot. You know, like, I've just noticed this stuff just from the fishing. Like, the waterways is where everything basically sort of comes from. Like, all your insects, all that. Like when I was a kid here, the amount of insects when I was a kid and now is There's hardly, you notice there's hardly any insects compared to what there was 30, 40 years ago.
Well, that's true. I think there's supposed to be 25% globally the insect population has crashed.
And that's a big worry, that, you know. Like, I went down the Snowies in summer, and I mean, I was amazed at the insect life. Like, it was just incredible. And that's what it was like here. And now, you know, so, like, I think sort of, I think one of the biggest issues we've got is population. As the population gets bigger, because you're sort of, you need all this stuff for the population.
Australia is going to go up in population, but something I knew, I'll get out of here and you tell me if it's stupid, but there's something known as peak something or other. So it's, there's peak chicken, when the maximum number of chickens on Earth.
Yeah, I know what you basically mean. Like, there's a maximum population for every sort of animal.
Well, historically we had the maximum number of babies born in 2000.
Yeah.
And so our population is going to go up as people live, but it'll start to curl down in 7 years.
Yeah.
But perhaps we won't live, live that
so
long.
That's where our population, like our birth rate, actually dropped. And then that's where they started bringing more people in. And all that's about is it's money. And it's all just money.
That's
because
right.
They need the economy growing. So, like, if it doesn't grow, all the wealthy people aren't making money, there's those jobs. So, you know, it's all, like, all the environment now, it's all just, basically, they'll just go with what they want, as long as it suits their agenda. If it doesn't suit their agenda, then they just don't talk about it.
So that's right.
Just ignore it. So, you know, I mean, like, I've sort of, you know, I see it all, and I sort of take note of it all, but really, there's nothing that's going to change it. It's not, like, even though I sort of, like, if you start talking about population control, then you're going to be a race as this and a race as that. You'll get hammered. Like, everything now is run by just media.
Well, I think it's the ability to have conversations is really hard, because people hammer people so much that everyone becomes defensive. Whereas if you're not being hammered, you can have a dodgy thought out there, and you might come back to it and might change it.
Yeah.
But if there's this hammering thought, everyone pulls their thoughts in their own yard, and there's no progress.
There isn't anymore. I mean, all you got to look at is all that stuff with Fraser Anning now.
With the egg at the back of the head.
Yeah, but no, with that post he put up, that started all that.
Oh, what was the post on?
What all that was about was his comments and all that, but when you actually, if you actually read it, it's like when Pauline Hanson started coming out years ago, like when she first came onto the political stage, I was watching her, and if you watch different channels, if you actually watched her speech, and then you watched how
it was edited,
it gave it a completely different meaning. You know, like the way they actually expressed it, the way you express something can give it a different meaning to what someone says. I noticed it all then. Like, that's when it started for me. So I don't generally pay that much attention to a lot of it now. I sort of see it and it's like, oh, yeah, here we go again. But the thing is, like, you might not agree with it, but you should really pay attention to it and think about it. You know, instead of, like, the way they've all carried on now, they just get outraged and carry on.
Oh, I don't know, treating it as a sporting match, I think, rather than
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no real, you know, no real discussion about something if it's outside what the majority of people on social media believe now. Like, they'll just hammer anybody and call them all these names, but they won't actually go through and consider all this stuff, you know? Like, it's sort of, and it's like that with a lot of things now. A lot of people don't even bother, and that's why they can't understand where, I think sometimes, you know, where election results and things don't actually match what social media predicts. You know, like, everyone on social media will carry on about something, but they're all a bunch of people that are sitting around a computer all day. They're not really. Yeah.
Look, some... oh, careful, you got the...
Oh, sorry, kids.
Okay, I'll have to cut. Right,
there's a bit of wool on there.
Yeah. Oh, there's a wool thing, but yeah, I'll have to catch it. I'll get into buckets of trouble, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got similar thoughts in terms of a lot of bad things happen when people are told to shut the whole population up. You open the stage for
Well, mate, things are... Like I said, I was only saying to a friend the other day, you know, I wouldn't want to be a young person now with what's going to happen down the track, but, you know, like you just go around. Like, I went down to Homebush Bay and, around there, and there's all these concrete blocks. There was never concrete blocks. So they didn't need all that stuff.
You know? I just stopped the...
all the people driving in the crowds, you know. Like that sort of stuff, it was all... Like I saw, I was actually in Turkey in 2011. Oh, anyway, it was before it all started here. And, that's what they were doing over there. If they didn't have guns, they'd just drive into a taxi, they drove into like bus bays with all people waiting to catch a bus and then got out and stabbed them. You know, they run them over with a car and then they get out. And it's like, it's going to happen here, but there was never that here. It's all there now, like all this security now that we've got to have that we never used to have.
And I think in a complex way, it actually creates the energy for the three or four people that nine that they do stop. It energizes the last remaining one. So you.
It's only going to be a matter of time till they're not going to post on social media before they do it, and that's all that's allowing them to catch them now. And that's what happened sort of with that stuff in Christchurch. They'd been notified, but they didn't pay attention to it. You know, people had reported these guys before they'd done it, but all you need is somebody to not to actually just plan it themselves and not actually tell anybody about it. And they could do massive damage. I go fishing, mate. I keep out of it all.
It's a lot. We have to do something. Well, I will have to get back. I'll get in so much. Yeah. I don't know. You get in trouble, but I will get into massive quantities of trouble.
My wife's in Queensland, so.
Okay.
I've got the day off, so I'm just sort of getting stuff.
Okay. Right. See you. That's not the case in mine. Right. See you. Okay. That's just a pole and a sign. That is pretty well typical of, I think, the sort of gentle approach, and I've taken up the fact that this person's taking it's my interpretation, a processed view of tweaking, observing, and going forward across here. So we've got the Inca civilization and quantum physics, and the fact that you wouldn't be able to, you can't change it. And even nowadays, when they recreate it, they can only recreate it with the fundamental belief structure in place. And so it's a complicated belief structure. So you couldn't introduce Copernican or Ptolemy, or even the many things that have come through, you couldn't introduce it because it's there, and their antenna for what to do is not with you, it's with someone else. So when you come to speak with them, they can only hear a series of bandwidth and work out how it fits in. And so this very much happens with the view that everything has a model. Yeah, I think that's the third thing, That's the third thing, which is quantum physics, which I'll just that's the three things. So I'll go back. One, that the system, that there is an explanation system that you can operate with, which is differential equations and complex numbers. Two, that system is whack. And three, is a more nuanced models 2.0. Everyone is operating on models 1.0. And if you don't have those three components together, it's probable that you might achieve a certain element of quantum physics, but not be fully there. So there are people who identify themselves as quantum physicists, but at the end of the day, when you read them, they will give an explanation in the WAC model. Or they might be very good, but they might know this. Or when they're talking about models, they won't pull people up and actually say it. Now, in terms of the WAC model, the idea is of the atom with a miniature electron, it would explode. The idea of the electron actually travelling through the proton, well, it actually doesn't travel, it is co-located in space with the proton. So if I have to, say if I was drawing a picture of one space, of one, a church, and then I had to draw a picture of a mountain, you'd actually draw over the same canvas in space. It's like seeing double, it's existing double. And therein, there is an aspect of quantum physics, but people don't believe that. And in essence, the WAC view is really almost an Inca view. And if you look objectively at what people say, they refer to power, the power system in them, and how it's struck together. So I think you really need to have that view before you venture into a discussion on quantum physics, because amazing, perhaps you will rest and say, if you are trained in your Inca civilization to smash down a theory you don't understand and reject it and put it, you're not going to get you're not going to get anywhere. Oh, let's see how this goes up here. You're not going to get anywhere. So, so really the introduction for this has to open your mind up to these possibilities and imagine yourself accepting it. And I think this is something else with the models that people have can't imagine themselves understanding, can't understand. So it's sort of like a high jump. You've got to visualize yourself understanding it, in the state of understanding. And you may have a run and you may not get over the high jump, but guess what? You're in your sports gear, you're on the oval, and you're having a go. And you're going to practice and you're going to reanalyze it. But if you can't imagine yourself understanding something, that's perhaps the fourth key component that you may not be up at all those levels, that you imagine yourself understanding it. So I haven't really discussed quantum physics here, but I've discussed, I don't know, people's views in terms of that their inability to understand quantum physics is, well, you need some sort of basic abilities, but if you are if your understanding is in terms of this culturally integrated understanding, having a thought outside your understanding safe zone will elicit non-understanding processes. And the critical thing is that you can't imagine yourself understanding it. So that's like, and one of the cultural things is that to imagine yourself understanding it, we sort of closet people and say, there are certain things that are beyond you, expert field, and if you can, there's a path to that stage of preconceiving understanding. So it sort of integrates together there. So this is why people are so wed to the whack view of the atom, with mostly empty space, little electron going in, and that whack view is just everywhere. This is the idea of a particle traveling at infinite speed between two points, and this traveling at infinite speed between two points is in actual fact a religious belief called angelic time, dreamt up by St. Thomas Aquinas to describe about how something could be here and rematerialize over there instantaneously and within an instant. And this is something which concerned Newton, and because his force was propagated at infinite speed, faster than the speed of light, and for which he says, I feign no hypothesis, and I'm not even going to go in the we're not in the process of being scientific. And in a sense, Newton, our greatest scientist, he himself departed from scientific inquiry. So I'm just going to wait sure I don't get murdered by this car, and I'll get in a certain amount of trouble for taking so long, over an hour, to get back. I may not. You never know. I might be lucky, I may be unlucky. What is it? One day I'll have to get my daughter off to piano lessons at 5 o'clock. Going across. So let's go in summary. It's hard to describe, going back, what a quantum physicist is. However, if you look at these components, and they're not strong in them, they're also likely not to be a quantum physicist. So one is the understanding of quantum physics equations, differential equations, and algebra. And algebraic numbers, these are complex numbers, and how to cope with that. Even though this is, look, when you get it down to it, there's nothing achingly, you know, hard to, it's not like the heavy side or Laplace, there's nothing really hard about it. Then the second aspect is the understanding that the current understanding is intrinsically sub-merchandisable, so that you can build a cake, I was going to say, with eggshell in it, and it's there. Now, if everyone's starving in a war, that's great, ship it out, sell it on the black market. But the current climate of technological requirements is that it's not merchandisable. Then the other understanding is that your thinking mechanism is model 2.0. That is, that your model loses fundamental qualities as it transfers across. A model is not like this with these tweaks. A model is actually hermetically sealed from it. That is, an electron has no moving parts. It has no surface. It's got all this type of stuff. Now, there's that, and bear in mind these are not hard, fast, do or die or not, because we're really not interested in saying you are not and you are. It's more as sort of seeing, are you ready to get on the quantum mechanical bus? The second thing is this also this fourth point, which I've come across, is the ability to conceptualize yourself understanding it. And one of the things that you see with quantum physics is that this is misinterpreted, I think, or misreported, that you cannot conceptualize yourself understanding it. Therefore, it is sort of a license for to say, well, don't bother. You know, it is understandable. It necessarily makes you giddy. And so this state, I think no one has really said that. And no one has really come in pretty hard and said, look, this model's wrong. That model's definitely wrong. And so this is where you can go. Sort of like a garden, and there's an area where there's the water runs through, gets no sunlight. There's an area with reasonable drainage, reasonable sunlight. That's where you should go. So this is saying these points are definitely wrong. So the point which are definitely wrong is that the electron is a hard object and would bounce off a nucleus, whereas the electron actually exists throughout the nucleus. But if you have that, and the model that everyone draws at school, now, you could say, that is definitely wrong. Now, the nature of it being wrong is actually quite interesting, because the whole power structure, the way that we build things, is up. It's looking with no clothes type of option. It's relatively complex to go through. It's actually, you would think this is Australian. There's so much muddy water at the moment. But what that, I don't know whether, I'll go back and check whether that bloke is audible. Because what often happens is it's in dictation mode. It might have picked him up. You never know. You might have to go, this might be a job for Audacity to go in and actually remaster it. So what he says can be bloody well picked up. Yeah, it's getting pretty, getting soaked at the moment. It's drizzled into the ground. Oh, I can't wait to get home. So, you know, the entire thing is that I think everyone has a concept of listening to a podcast, you know, being a bit like world championship wrestling in terms of here's the grave digger, here's the, I don't know what it is, whoever it is, I don't know who the world championship, I do remember these blonde looking fearsome people, and they fight and they've got a hammer throw, that's concluded. But everyone's expecting that sort of thing, but this is more like book club, where there are many interpretations, and there's sort of two processes. One is developing your own personal interpretation a little bit more, but being able to accommodate and understand other people's interpretations. And I think that's what the main objective of this podcast is. It's not to really ram it through your throat, but to go through. And just for my own memory's sake, I'm just going to go through those 4 points, which are distinct. Well, firstly, I'll go back and say, really, what we have at the moment is Aztec world, Aztec Inca world, where educationally we stick our kids in a pit and then we offer them loyalty to the Inca, socialist retirement, that is, our version of socialist retirement is access to the wealth system if you can basically lie and cheat. It sounds awful. So that's the forerunning. And then alternative to that is this nuanced view of someone with the potential to understand, the potential to move away from a very power hierarchy. If your atoms obey a strict power hierarchy, so do you. You know, obviously, so it's a bit threatening. But if we look at this nuanced way, we've got those four things again. One is that sort of fundamental, sort of like walking in the garden, having a contemplative thing of saying, this is the solution, this means that, and over time I will understand this differential equation, I will try to get a knowledge of it, sort of like the Dalai Lama, sort of, you know, seek grasshopper, that type of thing. And then a realization of the world outside is crazy. The realization that this is it, and what is presented to me is loaded with social social views. Then the next thing is that one to actually meditate and actually be, I wonder if you can hear the bloody rain. I can hear the rain on my hat, so I don't know, thank goodness I've got a hat on. My shoes are going to be soaked. No, if I'll get through. I'm nearly there. The model 2.0, that is, your model doesn't necessarily go across many aspects of it. A smile, the grin. But we do this all the time. We do this analogy. We tell us a fable. And does the fable only apply to foxes? Does it only apply to a cow or whatever it is? No, it's an allegory, and we can pick the story, but we've lost the ability to do that. And finally, the ability to imagine, which is the fundamental corrupting thing that I think people would be most upset with. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.